welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Lindsay, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thanks, Scott. I'm good. Yeah, I'm doing really well. Nice to talk to you.
I think I've done 100 episodes of this, and you're the first person to do it in their car. But you're not driving, yeah, so that's like the important thing.
Well, no. But yeah, first of all, I have the kids at home. It's summer break here in Seattle still, and so that's one thing. And then they started cutting the concrete in our foundation to put in egress windows. And I was like, I think the car is the safest.
Your escape room. I'm grateful for you being flexible, making yourself available. So thank you so much, Lindsay. We spoke very briefly before we hit record, but I'm excited to have you on the podcast. This whole podcast has been a journey for me as much as anything else, just in the sense of where we've moved it over the episodes. And we very much focus kind of like on maybe the environment and technical tactical stuff around kind of the coaching world we were in. And what we've found more recently is actually that's a very small part of the important stuff. And the more important stuff is kind of mindset and attitude and that kind of stuff, which I think is right down your street, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yes. You are speaking my language for sure.
Brilliant. There we go. So we got the right guest on for this episode. So thank you so much. Lindsay, if it's okay, for those people that don't know you or aren't familiar with your journey, just as is often the case in these podcasts, a bit of background about kind of your professional journey and what it is you currently do.
Yeah, I'm a mindset and mental performance coach, and I run a company that essentially trains and certifies other aspiring mindset coaches. So that's our focus now. I've been doing this for about 18 years. And it's definitely evolved. I used to work mostly with athletes, then I'd work with teams, then I'd work with coaches. And now, like I said, the focus is really on coaching the coaches, essentially. I got into mindset and mental performance coaching, like a lot of people, because I was really struggling as a high school athlete, wanted to play professionally, Division I college in the States. And then I wanted to play professionally. And I ended up doing all that. And this was in basketball. But I almost did not do that. And that would have been entirely because of my mental game. And I was lucky enough to get a mindset and mental performance coach at that time that I needed it. And I really never looked back. I started implementing the tools immediately. They made a huge difference immediately. And then they were the things that I went back to playing at the elite college level, then professionally. And sort of the impetus for my company was really looking around after that moment of getting it myself and looking around and seeing really everybody struggling at some level with a mental game and wondering why in the hell we weren't talking about that. And right after college, I started working with people, and essentially those were college teams at that time. And the number one thing I heard from these were elite athletes, like playing at the Division I level, quite successful by any measure. And they were like, why have I not learned this before? And which is exactly how I felt. And so I thought, okay, this is something. And, you know, this was 18 years ago that people weren't really talking about. I'm fairly certain that if someone had raised their hand to the athletic department and the coaching staff, who were lovely, and said, I'm really struggling with the mental side, that they probably would have found a sports psychologist, for example, or something. But there was no proactive approach to it. That, you know, in many cases there still isn't. And so this became really my life's work. I was very successful on the playing field, essentially. And it was in no small part due to the mental skills that I learned. And now that I'm practicing as a human, as an adult, and as an entrepreneur, and all that. I actually played soccer pretty seriously too. I was playing Olympic development and all that until I sort of felt like I had to choose. So I don't remember the tactics of soccer, but I'm not totally foreign to the sport.
They're very similar sports, soccer and basketball, very similar. Like in the way the ball moves at the outside, soccer. Your hands rather than your feet. That's the only difference. Yeah, if you watch five-a-side football, it's really similar to watching basketball.
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, you picked up something there straight away that I was going to mention, but I would imagine 18 years ago, you know, the whole subjects of mindset and kind of being brave enough to kind of say that, you know, I'm struggling around this, it wouldn't have been as common, would it? And do you think there was a fear factor in actually saying, actually, do you know what, I can't do this side of it? Was that part of the problem back then, where maybe that's not such the case now?
Well, I mean, our collective consciousness of like mental health. And, you know, it was starting before the pandemic. I think the pandemic really opened up sort of the floodgates of like, who are we kidding? Like, we're all freaking struggling with this stuff at some point, right? It might not be full mental health, but, and that's kind of separate. I kind of put that separate. I'm just saying like life, right? Like winning and losing and hard times and being isolated and all this stuff, like that is the human experience. And as the Buddha says, you know, that's suffering, that's life, right? And so
absolutely.
I think that started pre-pandemic, but I definitely think the pandemic really sort of, I think we all kind of got to the point of like, let's cut the shit, excuse my language, you know, like, let's talk about the stuff that matters. But I do think that that took a little while in sports. And it really depends on the culture. And so for people listening, I mean, I think that vulnerability really comes top down when you're talking about coaches and even the leadership of a team. And I will tell you one thing, Scott, is like, I really believe that there are a lot of mindset and mental performance training tools, and I'm sure some of them we will talk about today. But the simple act of giving space for people talking about things being hard, there is nothing more powerful than that, especially in a team sense, but also one-on-one or small groups where people can literally talk about how hard it is to come to practice after they missed a penalty kick, or you know, feeling like they lost the game because they let somebody get behind them, or whatever it is, and then having to pick themselves back up after something like that and talk about how hard it is, or talk about pregame nerves, or talk about having crippling self-doubt. When people get together and they talk about those things and they feel a little less alone and they feel seen and they feel like they don't have to be perfect, big shifts happen. Big shifts. And so I guess if there's one thing people could walk away with that's free, that anybody can do at any time, is creating that space. Not that it's so easy to do that. I don't mean to minimize that. It's actually a very brave thing. But if coaches can create that sort of culture where people are talking about that kind of stuff, those are really lifelong skills that, again, anybody can do. And it doesn't take an expert.
Yeah, that's a great step in the right direction, I guess, to start things off. For you then, Lindsay, obviously, you know, a top quality basketball player. When you discovered actually that the mindset aspect of this really helped you in your game, was that light bulb moment instantaneous in the sense of, right, actually, you know what, this made a big difference? Or was it when you kind of maybe towards the end of your career, you look back at that, actually, that's what made a difference? Or did you get it in the moment?
No, it was instant. It was instant because here's what happened. I was struggling. I was getting up at 5:30 in the morning. I had set my sights on playing Division I and professionally. I was lifting weights before school. I was running hills, like anything physically, I was doing it. And I had enough physical skills. I mean, I wasn't crazy tall. I was 5'9". I don't know what that is in centimeters, but I wasn't crazy, crazy tall. I wasn't crazy athletic, but I was athletic enough that if I put my mind to it, I was going somewhere. Yeah. But I wasn't going anywhere. I was struggling. And I would say that the one message that really, and this is how quickly I think mindset training can help, is I went from, I know that I'm the problem. Like I could feel myself playing scared. I could feel myself worrying about my teammates, second guessing myself, worrying about college scouts. Like I knew that I was mind effing myself. Like I had full awareness of that. But I will say, I knew I was the problem. I didn't know I was the solution. And once I got that message, it's like everything switched in me. I was like, okay, I'm not crazy. There's nothing wrong with me. And that's what I mean about like creating space for people to have those aha moments. Because whatever they're struggling with, someone else has struggled with it and it's solvable.
Absolutely.
And again, I'm not talking about actual mental health things. That's when you need to talk to a professional. I'm talking about everyday struggles of trying to do something great in the world, or even just trying to survive. And so it was instantaneous for me. Like once I recognized that, it was like, and we actually do a visualization using this metaphor, but it was like I was playing with a backpack on and I was able to put it down. There was all kinds of things I was taking out of the court that I really didn't need. I really didn't need to be worrying about all of this stuff. I needed to find joy. I needed to take all my hard work that I've been doing and just, you know, having fun playing. I needed to fall in love with the game again. I needed to trust myself. I needed to, and that's where you find all that flow. You know, it's not, It's not rocket science. It's really not rocket science. And I think a lot of people get in their own head about mindset and mental training of like, it has to be these big, big things. And it's like, it actually doesn't. In fact, a lot of times it's the simplest
It's the
tools
simple stuff,
that
right?
work
Yeah.
the most.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
And obviously, since then, making a career out of this, you experienced it yourself. There's nothing like experience yourself to actually be an advocate for it, right? That's for sure.
Absolutely.
Have you found studying it in a theory side, has that helped you kind of develop your own understanding and skills? Or is it really much because you've gone and lived and breathed? That's the biggest thing you can now offer people that you support, the athletes, the teams, or even the other coaches? Or is it a combination of both the theory and the experience together that makes a difference now?
It's definitely the combination, but I will say that, I played professionally until I was about 30. And I started learning about positive psychology and subconscious programming, and I even studied hypnosis, and I did that all basically in my 20s. But what I would do is I would take what I was learning and then I would apply it. And I actually think this is what all athletes, all humans need to do, is they need to take the research and the tools, and they needed to try it for themselves. And so I would learn something and then I would go try it myself. And I'd be like, this works, this doesn't work, this makes sense, I need to take this away. And that process, I think, creates something that cannot be taught or learned from a textbook or from anything, really. And I think that that's just true for any kind of learning. But yes, I mean, I do look at the research and the theories and the academic side, but I think a lot of people can get stuck in those things and get stuck in the learning mode. And I think the real world application is what my training and like my sort of unique voice is, as far as like really taking those tools and like what is actually works on a Tuesday night game, like what's actually going to work when someone's struggling with confidence with a college scout in the stands, or again, they blew it in the game, and like what do they actually do going to practice the next day? Because at that point, theories and academic research doesn't actually mean that much. But it is good to look at.
Yeah, exactly. Superb. Well, look, I can't expect you to cover 18 years in 45 minutes in massive detail, but if it's okay, I'm going to really try and unpick some of these things.
Okay.
Purely selfish, just for my own interest. I'm sure listeners will love it, but I'm so intrigued in these things. Like I say, part of our journey has got to this space now where we really recognize actually just how much the mental side of the game and I guess behaviors, attitude, application, that kind of stuff makes a big difference to the players that we coach. And I work with quite young players. And over the last couple of years, we've changed our focus. So we'll coach things now in our sessions, like rather than, playing out from the back, we'll coach resilience, or rather than, creating
Ooh, love
opportunities
it.
from our wide, we're having a winning mentality or being an awesome teammate. And we've started doing these things now. So I think I'm in a space where I'm open to it, but I know I've got loads of things to learn. So I'm going to ask some really selfish questions that are going to help me hopefully suit my players. But I feel a good starting point is kind of just what would be your definition of kind of mental training or mindset if they're different? I don't know if they are different or not, but just, let's define it in a way that you think would help me understand what we're going to be talking about in more detail.
Well, to me, it's all the same thing. I mean, you can nitpick the different terms, I guess, a little bit. But to me, mental training or mental performance, again, I kind of equate them the same thing, is taking the same effort and intention that you have towards physical training towards the mental approach. And I think the perfect example is, people often want to know what to do in the middle of a game when they feel nervous or they make a mistake or they're losing, or what do you do in those moments? Or a coach might say that. What do I do when an athlete makes a mistake and I can see that they're mentally going, in a bad way? What do I do then? And the equivalent of that is saying, in the middle of the game, I can tell my team's not in good enough shape. They haven't done enough cardio. What do I do? And the answer is nothing. There is
Yeah,
absolutely nothing
nothing
to
you can do.
do.
Yeah.
No. And so we have to be proactive in any kind of training, in our physical, in our mental, in our spiritual, whatever. It's all stuff done beforehand. No one remembers to do this stuff in crisis or in high stress situations if they haven't done it sort of off the field, so to speak, right? So that's the approach that we're taking, is that We all talk about sports being 95% mental or whatever the cliche is. And we don't have to spend sit down time doing mental training, maybe a little bit. But as you're saying, like making sure that it is a part of every single thing that you do. Sorry, there's airplanes going on overhead. Every single thing that you do within practice. And I love that a focus or a theme of which to, you know, I mean, you can take drills to another level if you have an intention behind it, that you are learning, you're teaching something within that drill. Drills are just drills. They can become so much more if you make it. And some of that athletes are going to get anyway, right? Winning, losing, screwing up in the middle of the drill. Like that's part of practice. But we can take it to another level by actually having solid tools that they learn to use in those moments.
And Lindsay, when you're supporting athletes then in the work you're doing before you were supporting coaches more now, would you, I'm guessing you wouldn't be with them in practice necessarily, would you? You'd be working on the outside, outside of practice. Was that useful? Was it frustrating? I can't work out, but for you, obviously being a player and wanting to be involved, not being there on court side with them or being around that training environment, how did you find support in that side of their game or like independently from what they were doing practically?
Yeah, it's a good question. When I was doing a lot of mindset work with athletes, I was doing a lot of teams. And so, and you know, I've also done individual, and that is challenging in some ways, but it's also that mentality of like, you know, at some point they're going to have a boss that they don't like, or they're going to have another stressful situation in their life and you can't be there, you know, before they take a test or all those sorts of things. So it's like, these are really life skills that they are going to have to like stand on their own two feet and be able to practice on their own. But there is something nice about it coming from the top down, or at least everybody on the same page. It's not mandatory, but it is nice if you can swing it. But yeah, I mean, it's all about people learning these skills so they can do them whenever they need them.
Absolutely. And this is probably a really hard question to put on you, especially just off the cuff like this. But if you had to list, I don't know, I won't give a number, but as many as you think would be, say, key mental attributes for a successful athlete, the things that either worked for you or you've seen work for other teams or individuals, you know, I could probably list 100, couldn't you? But if there was like maybe 4 or 5 or more or less, depending on what you think is most relevant, you know, I might say resilience, for example, is something I think is an important one, but that's just my view. Is there some of these things you kind of, your go-to kind of attributes, think, right, let's make sure this player's ticking this, this, and this, because that's going to really help them out? Or is that unfair to say, because everyone's different?
I think there's a lot of things within resilience. That was the first thing that I was thinking of. I mean, the ability to bounce back with the ups and downs of sports is crucial. You cannot be successful if every little thing throws you off. That is for sure. The other thing that I would say, I think, is less talked about, I think we have less sort of a collective awareness about it. And it's this, it's the ability to suspend results, like the ability to suspend the need for results, I should say. So what I mean is, let's say we have a goal. We believe in that goal. And this is, again, sort of tied to resilience, but it's a little bit deeper. We have this goal. We can see it. We believe that it's going to happen. And then what happens is it's not happening. It's not even close to happening. How long can you hold on and keep working toward, we don't even actually really have a name for this, like persistence maybe, but it's not even persistence. It's like actually, because nobody, it's not hard work. That's part of it, but it's actually deep inside of you. Do you let your dream change based on your results, or you just keep working to get to that dream? And that's where visualization is super powerful. That's where positive affirmations, this is where we have a whole toolbox of things that can help keep that belief alive when all of your evidence in front of you is to the contrary.
Yeah.
That's a really hard thing to do.
Yeah.
But that is what the greats do.
Because nobody gives
them a championship.
No, and you know, and only one team can win that each season, right? And it might not be your team, but you've got to go again the next season and go again and go again and eventually believe you're going to get there. So yeah, I'm trying to think of the word for it. I can't think of it either, but I get what you're saying. Well, you spoke about like different processes and frameworks, and I know you have a stick a 6-step positive performance framework. And again, I don't want to, you know, I know you could spend hours going into this, I'm sure we could, but
I can do it fast.
Yeah, well, only if that's reasonable. I don't want to put you under kind of make it unfair, but if you think we could kind of just touch around that and talk about that, if you think that's okay to do so. I don't want to set it short, put it that way, but if we can kind of dig into that, that'd be great.
No, I think it's helpful because a lot of people, and certainly people that are listening to this podcast, have that desire to improve their coaching, to reach kids through sports at a higher level. And so like, for me, that's my life's work. And I know it is for you too. So it's like anything that I can do to help people do that better, I'm in. Because I think a lot of people get stuck in like, well, what do I actually do at practice? What do I actually do? Like, I'm YouTubing the heck out of it. I'm reading all the books. And again, what do I do on a Tuesday practice? So we teach in our certification, which is a 4-month certification that if anybody's interested in being a mindset coach, we can, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but our website has a lot of information about that. In that certification, we teach a 6-part framework. And these are the things, again, there's a lot of tools out there. In my experience, everyone thinks their problems are very unique and they need some special thing to get over whatever they're struggling with. And I would say that all athletes need these 6 steps, period. And you can take them and you can implement them. And this has taken me a long time to figure out what the things are that people actually need. And to some degree, you may hear them and be like, those are so obvious or they're so simple. And like, that's kind of the point, right? Like so many athletes don't have these things in place. And if they did, their game would improve and their performance would improve by a lot just by having these tools. Okay, so I'll stop talking about that. All right, so step one is really a basic understanding of how the brain works. In other words, our brain wants to keep us safe and small. And I think one of the main tool or like awarenesses that I think is important, one I talked about already, which is my brain is the problem. I'm the problem, but I'm also the solution. And with that, our brain is constantly trying to keep us safe, even as we are trying to get better. So let's say me as a basketball player, you know, it's Monday. I am trying to get better today at basketball, but my brain actually wants me to be the same that I was yesterday. The best way for me to survive today is to be very similar to how I was yesterday. And once you understand that, I think a lot of people have that internal shift of like, oh, that's why things are hard. That's why it sometimes feels like I'm doing all the work and I'm putting my foot on the gas, but I also have my foot on the brake. This is how our brain works. Every human brain works this way. There are tools with which to overcome this, but we don't necessarily do it naturally. Okay, so that's step one. Step two is for us in our training, it's visualization and thought work. So what I mean by that is learning how to train our subconscious to get what we want and really having strong tools. We teach something from cognitive behavioral therapy, which is our thoughts lead to our emotions, which lead to our actions, which leads to our results. I'll say that again. Our thoughts lead to our emotions, which lead to our actions, which leads to our results. So simply shifting our thoughts actually changes our results. And often we think our thoughts are facts. So let me give you an example. My coach hates me. This is a thought that feels like a fact. And when people believe that thought, they feel a certain way about practice. They act a certain way in practice. And their results are going to be reinforcing the idea that their coach hates them. When we don't recognize that the thought is a thought and not a fact, we get into big trouble. Versus, a thought we could shift to is, my coach is hard on me because she cares. This is going to create a different emotion. It's going to create a different way that I show up for practice. And it is no doubt going to affect my results. Okay? So that kind of work is crucial. So that's step two. Step three is any kind of pre-practice routine. We have something called the Braver, which incorporates visualizations, affirmations, breathing. It's a 5-minute pre-practice routine. That's also on our website. A lot of coaches are implementing this because it's, we have a guide and you do a couple workshops, but then you have this pre-practice routine that really helps people get mentally prepared for practice. And generally what I've seen is coaches understanding strategy and tactics and drills, but no one has talked to them about, you know, little Johnny breaking up with his pretend girlfriend before practice, or, you know, getting in a fight with their dad before practice or whatever. They have to come to practice and we have all these dynamic warm-ups to get them physically warm, and they're not there mentally. So a pre-practice warm-up is crucial. Then we go
Lindsay,
into pre.
Lindsay, so on the third one, then the pre-practice one, would that be for individual or for a team? Would you? Is that something you do on a personal level? It could be for either, could it? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Either. So I like doing it with a team, and that's where a coach could implement it as a team. But everybody would have their own affirmations and their own visualization.
Okay.
So they may do it together in a circle, but they have their own visualization experience to get them mentally prepared for that practice.
The one that works for them, right? The one that they're comfortable with, yep. That works for them.
Yeah. Yep. And this is where some coaching has to be, you know, implemented as far as what's an appropriate affirmation, what should they be visualizing, that sort of thing certainly helps. And so that's the pre-practice. So that's step three. Step four would be pre-game. Now, we can also use our pre-practice visualization braver in pregame. That's fine as well. But this is where we start understanding our fight or flight response, nerves versus excitement, how important it is to get our adrenaline going. And some of this would be an awareness piece of where does my physiological response need, we call it the hyped up level. And this is based on some research called the inverted U theory, which basically says that for performance, we all have an optimal hyped up level. And if we're above that level or below that level, it's like a bell curve, right? If we're above that level, our performance is going to decrease. If we're below that level, our performance is also going to be decreased. So for me as a basketball player, an example would be like, if I was above that level, I was like running around fouling people, you know, and like my coordination was off maybe. If I was below that level, I looked sort of like sleepy, or I kind of assumed we were going to win and I just wasn't pumped up enough. And this is crucial. Like so many athletes, one, don't know where they need to be regardless of the competition. And they also then don't have the tools with which to get themselves more pumped up or more relaxed.
It's so true, Lindsay. I'm seeing, as you're speaking, I'm seeing it now. And I think of the players that we've got, and you'll have some that kind of will, even in a game, they'll kind of run through the dial, if you like, and there'll be a four, yep. Then they'll go to a 10, and then they'll go to, yep, the eight, which is great, and then drop back to the four again. And you're trying to, you know, just hit that sweet spot with them as much as you can, or at least that kind of, I guess, that space that they're in, that, yep, kind of that right optimum level. But we've never really spoke about it. So we're almost doing, yep, it on the fly in the moment. And, yep, that's hard, right, for an athlete.
And here, I like the dial metaphor too. I would also say what happens when you leave it up to chance is it gets determined by the other team, by what side of the bed they woke up that day, what the referees do, how the first couple minutes of the game go. And so as a coach, you're sitting there on the sideline like, I have no idea who's going to show up today. I have no idea how they're going to play because there's no consistency in their mental preparation. And so, the first level of that is awareness, and also what's worked in the past. I think this is a really empowering experience for athletes too. No matter what age they are, they often have a lot of experience about what's worked for them in the past. And so that can be kind of a fun exercise. You know, I will say I'm the expert in mental training, but you're the expert in you. You know, like what has worked in the past? And of course, as they, you know, go up in their experience and their levels, they're going to have more of that. And then they're going to rely on these tools even more. So pregame is, man, it's such a missed opportunity for so many people. And they think it's about what, you know, shoe they put on first, right? And which Gatorade they drink. And so dialing that in can be really, really powerful. So that's pregame. And then the last two are sort of short, but man, these are so, I mean, I think either any of these tools are really like simple to implement, but these two are like low hanging fruit. Like anybody could do this. We have a course on our website called Mistake Ritual Magic. And what we teach is how to deal with mistakes or even just being able to reset in the middle of competition. We know mistakes are going to happen. That is part of sports. What do we actually do? How do we anchor ourselves? How do we mentally move forward in that moment? It takes practice. Again, that's not something you're going to figure out in the middle of a game. And so if we can get a really solid routine, and what does that look like? Again, this is low hanging fruit. This is, I'm going to learn when I miss a shot to take a deep breath. And maybe it's right then, or maybe it's the next time out. I take a deep breath. I say a reset word to myself. I may, depending on the sport, I might do a hand signal and I breathe out. Teams can do this together. They can remind themselves to do it. They can have a single word, or everybody can do it individually. It doesn't really matter. Here's what matters: that it's done ahead of time and that it's practiced. So this is where a coach can implement it. They can do a half hour, 1 hour workshop, and then it's resetting every drill, every water break, every timeout. We are practicing our reset word. And this is again where getting the coaches not only bought in, but actually practicing what they preach. I mean, how many coaches do you know that could use learning how to take a deep breath in the middle of a game? Coaches need to reset. Yeah, exactly. We're all human.
There's one sitting right here. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do this with my daughters when I can feel myself. They actually now remind me to take deep breaths when things are getting crazy in our house. But the ability to reset is such an undervalued tool. And it's so simple. It does take a lot of practice, but especially in a group team sport, if you just assume that you're going to be doing it during practice and you just remind everybody, it becomes second nature. And it doesn't have to be just when things are bad. It can be just a reset at halftime. It can just be when you're subbing into the game. It can be at a penalty kick or any, you know, injury break, whatever it is. And every sport's different. But a mistake ritual or reset ritual is so easy to implement and has huge ramifications, because we've all been that coach or that parent or that athlete that you see somebody and you can almost see their mind like going after a mistake. I mean, they are on an, and then it compounds.
Yeah.
They lose confidence. They make another mistake. They get pulled out of the game, blah, 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 right? And it's like this runaway train that if we can grab a hold of it in that moment, it has a huge ripple effect on performance. Huge.
Is that number five then? So that'd be the mistake ritual magic. That's number five, managing mistakes and being prepared
yep.
for that.
And again, we have that course, but this is literally, that's what it is. I mean, we talk about it a little bit more, but obviously it's a course, but
yep.
it's really can be simple. Okay. And then the last one is a post-competition routine. And it can be more in depth, but it can also be really simple. And the purpose of this is what we have seen is everybody wants to get better in their sport. And post anything, post practice, post competition is the perfect way to gather information about improving. And so many people miss it. Why do they miss it? Because it's overly emotional. They're either feeling great because they won or played well. And they're like, whew, I'm just going to ride this wave. I don't want to think about what I can improve because that feels crappy. And, you know, this is a fleeting moment. So I'm just going to feel good. Or they feel bad and they didn't play, or they played bad, or they lost, or they hate their coach or whatever. Neither one of those extreme emotional reactions actually helps you get better. And so we teach something called critique your performance without criticizing. So we want to look at how we did. And this is helping athletes learn to critique without criticize, remove the emotions. Just look at what went well and what didn't. And again, that's how simple it can be. It can be what went well, what didn't go well, what can I do better next time? And this is a practice because a lot of people get hung up on the emotions. They're perfectionists. They don't want to feel bad. When all of those feelings are optional.
Yeah.
You don't have to feel bad. This is a sport. We're trying to get better.
Absolutely.
And this is where a coach, I think, can really help too, is there's no shame. There's no blame. And when you create that environment, here's what happens. There is a freedom to playing that grows out of that ability to remove emotions. Because if you're worried about how you're going to feel about mistakes, you're going to make more of them.
Yeah.
That is just how it works. So that post game, if people can buy in and really do it and keep it simple and remove the emotions, is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
I really appreciate you summarizing that six steps in that kind of very succinct kind of way, because there's so much in there, obviously. And like you say, this has been something that you put together over years, right? And I'm sure there's been other variations of this over time. And this is where you've got to now. And you can see how, what a wonderful framework and tool that can be once you've had a chance to work through and really understand it. It's interesting, you said at the beginning that you've kind of moved, I guess you worked with athletes, then teams, now more with coaches. Was there ever times back when you were working more with athletes than coaches that you might get slightly frustrated in the sense that, you know, with all the stuff you're supporting around here with the athlete, the environment they were in potentially with the coaches that had them was very challenging. And therefore, however this great this is and helpful it could definitely be to improve circumstances, you know, ultimately, if there's a coach there that's driving an environment that's really kind of not conducive to this, that must be quite hard for you, you know, in the space you are. And I guess by working with coaches now, you can influence environments a bit more than you might be working with athletes on their own. So is that been part of that journey as well for you, moving from the athlete to the coaches, driving environments as much as it is driving athlete performance?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I got to the point where I had such a drive to get mindset and mental performance coaching out to the world, to the masses. You know, I just have this belief that everybody needs this. And came to the realization, one, that there needs to be more mindset coaches out there. There needs to be more people. But also that, like, if you can reach coaches, then each coach has 10 athletes or 15 athletes or 20 athletes. And I would also say that, like, one of the big sort of ethos of our company is, like, we're students first, like all of us. And so in our certification, people come in and they want to learn how to work with clients. They want to learn how to get paid to work with clients. Like, they want to build a business. Like, that's their goal. But they spent a whole month sitting in the student chair. Like, you are going to learn all these tools as a human being, because if you're not practicing what you preach, you're going to have misalignment. It's not going to be authentic. And like, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work to be telling people to be mentally tough or to work on positive self-talk or to, you know, be in the moment when you're not doing it. Like, it just doesn't work. And yeah. So I think, that's just the evolution of recognizing that coaches really need this. And then once they practice it themselves, it becomes so much easier and more fulfilling and more in alignment. It's like these tools, it's like, even if they don't sit down and teach them in workshops or official sessions, they start living it so much that other people start understanding it. It's like osmosis or something. I don't know.
For sure. Well, I guess you get that authenticity, don't you? You start believing it more yourself because you've experienced it. Like, you know, your passion comes shining through. And I'm sure, you know, most of that is the fact that you had it yourself on your journey. So therefore you're invested in it. You have the authenticity when you speak about it. It comes through with that passion and that clarity that I think it would be hard then to sell that if you didn't feel the same way yourself genuinely. So that makes total sense.
It's a continual thing too. Like, our coaches, you're always in the student chair.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. And that, I think that's that vulnerability too, that it's like, okay, yeah, maybe I'm not on the court right now, but like, I am practicing these thought shifting techniques when my kid throws goldfish all over the floor,
yeah.
or in my business and I have to keep a big goal and I don't see the results right away. Like, I am consistently practicing what I preach and being the example. And that, you know, my clients don't see all that obviously, but like, they pick up on it if you're not living it.
It's transferable life skills, right? So you can use these things in different areas of your
life. Absolutely.
And you mentioned breathing a few times here, and I won't get into the details behind that, but I'm going to guess like that breathing, that, I guess, self-awareness. I mean, how important a part of that is this?
I think it's huge. You know, I think learning breathing techniques, you know, again, what we're talking about with so much of performance is we're talking about being able to regulate our nervous system. And, you know, you can go into the different breathing techniques. You can go into the vagus nerve. You can go to the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. We can talk about all that, but everybody understands and has that experience of feeling butterflies or feeling whatever, and being and practicing breathing and being intentional about your breathing and having some sort of experience with that. And so breathing is important. It's free. Anybody can do it at any time. And so it's a really valuable tool, and it's underrated and underutilized for sure.
And maybe,
I mean, you see some of the top athletes doing it now.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, some of these things are much more easy to see now that you literally see them on TV. You see people doing some of these things and you don't understand this, but you can see it's going on. So, you know, I think we have an obligation to try and understand it a bit more ourselves, right? If we're going to work in this space, we should at least look at it. Maybe this is a tricky question as well, but is there any kind of shortcuts, but is there any ways in which you could give coaches tips, regardless of sport they're in, about how they can embed some of these things into their practices for their young athletes, if they're working with you know, young athletes particularly? Is there little tricks and ways in which they can get some of these things put in the practice?
It's a good point. One, I think the most important thing is working on this stuff yourself. I really do think that comes through in so much of our teaching and coaching. If you're learning this stuff and growing in this way and practicing it yourself, you will find opportunities to talk about it, and you will have conversations with your athletes that are deeper and more authentic and more real. So I do think that that's a really important piece that bears repeating. I think being okay with small things that you can layer in more later is also important. Because I think a lot of times people get overwhelmed. And I think that's why you're asking this, but I just sort of want to reiterate that, like, even if you implemented one thing, that would be great.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be, you don't have to go get certified. You don't have to be an expert in this stuff. You know, you could do something as simple as having everybody close their eyes before practice and taking 5 deep breaths and having them watch a movie in their brain about what they want to accomplish at practice. The repetition, and this is where I think a lot of people do want to get certified or get more training, because they're halfway in on it. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe they'll do a visualization one time or do one thing, but they don't stick with it because they're not quite sure that it's working. And I think that's why practicing it is really important. So I would think of, what can you commit to? What do you really believe in yourself? Like, for me, visualization is such a huge tool that I've experienced on a really deep level. And so I don't really care if kids roll their eyes. Do you know what I mean? Because, like,
you believe in
it.
You know it works. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I would say, if you don't fully believe on it, they're going to sniff that out. So whatever you do, don't do it for the result. They're not going to be thanking you for it. They may look distracted. That's okay. They're kids. Don't do it because you think they're going to play great, or because, you know, not all of this stuff is going to have like this huge benefit right in the beginning. You may just be planting a seed for a future. But again, choose one thing, a visualization or the mistake ritual, you know, that you could just do throughout practice, or it's post practice where you're doing the 3 questions. Just choose one thing and do it. But it's got to be something that you really believe in. It's got to be something that you're not going to waver on. Because I think if you're doing the throwing spaghetti approach and seeing what sticks, it's not good for you. It's not good for them. And it's coming through with a lot of doubt. And this is why it is great to be certified or go through a course, because what we've done is we've done what we've done over 18 years with thousands of athletes. So I think that in some ways, it's not that what we teach is such rocket science, but it helps you get to that place of belief that these are proven tools. Like, we're not throwing things over the wall. You know, lots of teams and athletes have done the Braver pre-practice, like thousands. And so Lindsay, that can help give you the confidence too.
You can research and you can look around. You can, like you say, podcasts, YouTube videos. There's so much stuff out there if you want to look in the topics. Yep. Actually finding someone who's put it together in a way that actually is coherent, it's user-friendly, you know, the stuff that works and doesn't work. I think that's, we'll come on to a bit more about, you know, your performance training stuff that you do. But I can see how you can almost get lost once you lift up this can of worms. You know, like, there's so much stuff in there to look at that, you know, you're trying to teach yourself some of these things. You can pick up little bits and pieces. But I think, again, it's a bit like when we first start coaching, we'll go and look at YouTube videos for drills and practicing these kind of things, and you know, half of them really have got no purpose for your environment. And it's not until you become a little bit more, dare I say, experienced, but just maybe just you make those mistakes, you realize actually it's not about finding other people's stuff, it's finding things that are going to work for the environment you've got, right, and your own style and your own players, and you know. Yep. And often people that have gone through that journey like you guys have, then they're the best ones to lean towards, because they've kind of, it's more of a beaten path, right? You've done the hard work for us.
And I think a lot of people, and I would just say that it's a very human experience to really want to do the right thing and really want to, in this case, implement a system within your team and go do all the research and get totally overwhelmed and do nothing.
Yeah.
That happens a lot. And this is normal. What we don't think of as the solution is to do less. Like, for those of us in athletics, that's like a dirty word. But I would say that if you can, you know, whatever your next season is or whatever, like, commit to implementing one new tool. Again, a pre-practice, an in-practice, a post-practice, like you're doing, the themes for the day, and just having all your drills around that. Do something, a weekly, we call them mental huddles, where you get your team together and you work on one topic. Just implement one thing, not 10 things, not 5 things, one thing. And then you can layer them in over time.
What about age, Lindsay? What age can you put some of the things in place with players? And we coach from under sixes up to under 16s in where I am. But, you know, can you work some of these things on really young you know, athletes that are under 6 years old? Is this something you can put in there?
Absolutely. Yeah. I have one of my certified students. She has a soccer training academy, and she says her favorite group is like the 3 and 4 year olds. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't even, it's so cute. Yes. Everything can be altered. And I will tell you this, because as a parent, or if you've coached young kids, you know, their imagination is really active. You know, that stories and imagery and play and it is really, really fun and really important to them. And that's great news, because that's exactly how the brain works. Like, any of our visualization exercises are all about stories, metaphors, imagining things. And so a lot of times you're going to change the language and you're going to use different ways. You know, you're not going to tell them lay down and meditate, right? I mean, obviously, right? And so just like helping them understand things at their level. And I got this from actually Dr. Becky Kennedy. There's a breathing exercise, and you can't see me if you're listening to the podcast, but you pretend like you're holding a cup of hot cocoa, and you have them, and my daughters do this all the time, and they're all under 8. So they take a deep breath through their nose to smell the hot cocoa. And then we even talk about like what flavor it is. You know, my youngest starts talking about it being coconut flavored hot cocoa. And I'm like, okay, we're breathing in coconut hot cocoa. That actually sounds delicious. Okay. Yeah. So we breathe in through our nose to smell it. And then we blow out to cool it. And we do that a couple times. And I cannot tell you, even as an adult, how much it helps to have the hot cocoa breath as my reminder. Like, it, you have to breathe in through your nose because you have to smell it, and you have to breathe out through your mouth because you have to cool it. That is so much easier to remember and so much more fun than take a damn deep breath. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's just one example of like that. If you did that with 4-year-olds or 5-year-olds or 6-year-olds between drills, like, that's a little seed that's going to help them understand how to regulate themselves. You know, little Susie feels bad because she screwed up in a drill. have her take a deep breath in that moment. Again, visualization, kids do it all the time. It's easy for them. As long as you don't get, I actually think the middle age, when they start having that like self, like being more self-conscious and hoping that they're doing it right, that's actually harder. You know, if you have a little kid and you tell them to watch a movie in their mind about them playing, I don't know if they're doing it right. Nobody knows. It doesn't matter. They're getting in the habit of seeing themselves play and have fun. So I think all ages, I think you just alter the language a little bit and focus on different things and always try to have fun with it and always try to make it a game.
Absolutely. And I guess the earlier you start these things, as long as it's age appropriate, then, you know, it's easy to layer those things up later in life, right? Isn't it? Because if you get to those teenage years, they can be a bit more challenging, a little bit more cynical about things. If they've done it,
absolutely,
if they're doing that, then they're not going to, the barriers won't be quite as high, will they, to be able to put some of these things in that age. So fantastic. Lindsay, awesome. One more question, if that's okay. I just, again, not to be unfair here, but is there any kind of like red flags or things that you've seen that really, as coaches, you know, if we're trying to tackle some of this stuff, we really shouldn't do, or some mistakes you've seen that coaches might make, maybe with good intentions and trying to do the right things, but any kind of red flags or things we should definitely try and avoid if we're, you know, if we're trying to approach mindset and mental training?
I would say, similar to what I said earlier, I think if we're not totally bought into whatever we're doing, there's going to be a little crack of doubt, and then we're going to project that and they're going to mirror it back to us. So I always give the example of, like, let's say you were implementing a weight training routine and the athletes, you know, rolled their eyes and complained about it. You wouldn't care. You know what I mean? Because everybody knows weight training works. So, like, if you want to be good, get your ass in the weight room. Who cares?
Yeah.
You know, but I think if we try to implement things, and again, we're not living it, we're not practicing it, we're not totally bought in. The minute athletes roll their eyes or complain or hem and haw, or even just look like they're not interested, which again is a reflection on us thinking that they're not going to be interested, all bets are off. It's not going to work. Not to the level that you're going to want it to. Then you'll be like, see, they're not bought in. And then they're going to complain to all their coaching friends, you know? And so I think we really have to almost come in, like, I don't want to say pure, but like really clean with whatever we're going to implement. And we have to be set in the same way that if we were going to implement a weight training program, we would be ready. We wouldn't try to have them do everything at once. We wouldn't have doubts about it. We would just stick to a simple, clean program and we would just do it and we wouldn't waver.
Yeah, makes total sense. Awesome. And look, if you don't mind, Lindsay, and you've mentioned it, you know, the obviously now you do, what one of the things you provide through the positive performance training is accreditation for coaches who want to get into this space and, you know, learn more about it. Can you just give us an overview of how that would work, or how it does work?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will also say that I can talk about it. And then if you're interested at all, I can give you the link on our website, positiveperformancetraining.com. There is a free guide called How to Become a Mental Performance Coach. It's actually positiveperformancetraining.com/guide.
Okay.
And it's about a 70-page book that really talks about so many of the questions that I get from aspiring mindset coaches. Because a lot of people, I always say, are sort of sitting on the sideline. They're seeing this need in their athletes. Maybe they want to implement it with their team. Also, they may want a side income. They may want to phase out of on-field coaching. They may want just an option to have their own business and have clients. And so I see a lot of people wanting to do that and no idea where to start. And so I would say, if you're interested in that, where you start is with this book. It has so many of the questions that you have, many that you probably don't even know that you have. It talks about pricing. It talks about how to get started, where you can get your first clients, whether you should get certified or get an academic degree. It talks about all of that. So I would definitely highly recommend getting that. Let's see. Our certification bore out of, I saw so many people on the sideline wanting to do this and no idea where to start. And you know, I think that a lot of people think that the only path forward is to go get a master's or a PhD. And that doesn't fit for a lot of people because they don't want to do academic. They don't want to do research. They don't want to work for an institution. They just want to help. They just want to have a more fulfilling career. They want to make some money at it. They're seeing a need. And they also don't have 4 years to go back to school or two or five or whatever level you're trying to get to. And so we created the certification to really train more mindset coaches because people needed more mindset coaches. And so it's a 4-month certification. It's actually a dual certification. You get certified as a positive performance mindset coach, and you get certified as a performance visualization specialist. So again, we bring in visualization. I'm trained in hypnosis. We basically teach you how to communicate with the subconscious and do really deep work on people's beliefs, limiting beliefs, the stories they tell themselves. It's really a tool that can really fast track people's progress in any aspect of their life. So I find a lot of people go through our certification and they end up using the visualization training with their kids or with their spouse going into a job interview or a friend struggling with something. And so that's a big part of our training. But anyway, it's 4 months and we teach you all the tools as a student. You do the performance visualization specialist in month two, and month three is about working with your first clients. And we have a whole system that we teach. So we always say it's the training wheels. You know, for some people, they come off and they come up with their own system. But man, for a lot of people, they just need that, you know, like our 6-step framework. They need to do that and get really good at it to then develop their own voice. And we really encourage that. And then month four is all about getting your first clients and understanding pricing and packaging and how to start a business. And a lot of those things that can be intimidating for people that haven't done it, but are actually simple once you learn how to do it. And then we have a follow-up mastermind with mindset coaches, because one of the things that I've seen is I've done this a lot on my own, and it's so much nicer to have a coach and a community to support each other and learn from each other. And that's one of the biggest hacks you can do in life, right? Is just to be around other people. And so that's a really powerful community as well. So yeah, we're going through it right now with some students. I think we have 15 people in this cohort. We'll open up, I don't know when this podcast is being launched, but we'll open up our next certification probably in October of 2023. So that's right around the corner.
That was my question. Is that rolling starts? You do like one cohort at a time, then move on to the next group.
Yeah, everybody goes through the 4 months together.
Perfect. And is it online?
So we have, doesn't matter where you're based, you can have
access to it. Yeah, fantastic. Yep.
And we have online courses with that. You get access to all of our online courses and all of our systems and all of our visualizations and scripts. And like, we give you all the templates. We try to make everything as easy as possible, because again, I see a lot of people with this passion and wanting to help, and they just get overwhelmed, and then they end up wasting time on stuff that really doesn't matter and doesn't actually help them build a business and doesn't actually help them help people.
Yeah.
And so we give the shortcuts for all of that and really help people along the path.
It sounds awesome. I'm so grateful for you sharing, you know, your journey, helping us with the questions, what it is you do now. We'll put the link in the show notes to the 70-page book so people can find that nice and easy. And obviously we'll put your details in as well. So people want to find more about you, they can do that. We always ask our guests this one question, if that's okay. If there was one thing you could change about the world of coaching, you can take about mindset if you want, or about mental training. But if there's one thing you could change about the world in relation to that, what would it be?
I think I still go back to coaches practicing this stuff. I think if coaches were, because a lot of us are driven, high performance, hard on ourselves type people. And if we can learn to help ourselves first and sit in that student chair and really work on our own mindset, I think a lot of things would shift.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought you might say that. Brilliant. Lindsay, you've been awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much. I know it's like how you've gone really touched service and loads of these things here for us. I really appreciate that, because I know every one of the things we discussed, you could have probably spent an hour talking about each one of those things individually if we had more time. So thank you so much for being succinct and going through it. I will certainly be looking at this in more details, and I'll be looking at the booklet as well. So thank you for that. If people want to reach out to you and find out more about the company, what it is you do, is there a good way of going about that?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at Lindsay Positive Perform. So you can certainly reach me through there. But our website, positiveperformancetraining.com. And I have my own podcast, which is the Mindset Coach Academy.
I've listened to a few I've seen, and they're short and sweet. Good. Mine are way too long, but like now yours are like 7-8 minutes, aren't they? They're really good and really
we
punchy.
Have both. We have we have longer episodes, and then we have what we call Mental Mondays. So yeah, there's a little bit of a buffet there. You can go. I do an individual longer podcast myself, where I'm talking about a single topic, and then I do an interview similar to this, which is probably about the same length. And then I do these short Monday episodes. Right.
It's a short one.
So you can kind of choose. Yeah.
Well, again, if we could find links, those, I'll put them in the show notes. People can find those ones as well. So we can listen to a few of those. Brilliant. Lindsay, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. Look, best luck with everything. I'm sure there'll be more topics and things that I'll uncover on my little journey. If I find something that I can come back, can I come back to you and get you back on the podcast again to talk in more detail about that?
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you so much for having me on. It really means a lot to me.
Oh, you've been a star. Thank you, Lindsay.
Thanks, Scott. Take care.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.